Hi, this is Stacy from the Advisor, and hello there, everybody. I have a special guest. He is part of our podcast community. He has his own podcast on the show, and it's Sander Vance D, and he is the owner and founder of Moral Eats. Today, he'd like to discuss what a healthy diet is, and he's going to go into depth about a lot of different topics that affect our lives health-wise. So, Sander, why don't you take it away and let everybody know a little about yourself and the topic we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's as far as a healthy diet, it's something that I'm invested in personally because I struggle with my own health, and also financially is producing food is what I do for a living. So I grew up on a dairy farm, and now we are in the process of trying to transition that farm to regenerative practices. So right now the dairy that we produce is still part of the commercial market, but we have the grass-fed beef, we have pasture turkeys and pasture pork, and we also source some wild seafood. And so like that's the food side of what we're producing. But then also like around the time, like originally I never really thought much about regenerative agriculture, and to be honest, I was fairly set in my ways. We had a successful dairy business, so why change anything really? We had a business that worked, and the motivation for all this change that I'm trying to create in our farm, but in agriculture as a whole, really kickstarted with my own health issues because my testosterone basically disappeared, and I got really tired, really weak. My libido disappeared, and it had a massive impact on me, as you could probably imagine. I was 25 years old and I had no testosterone. And it had me questioning everything as far as like my health choices, the healthcare system, which wasn't really able to help me besides just prescribing me with hormone replacement therapy. And then it also had me questioning the way we farm, which I was really focused and interested on animal welfare because I just love working with animals. So I wanted to kind of find a way to give back to these animals. But it also led me towards regenerative agriculture. And that's why we're that's how that's what got us to the road that we're heading down now. But like in that time, it took me 6 years to refine and rebuild my health to the point where I can now produce my own hormones again. And in that 6 year period, I've tried absolutely everything as far as, and I was very, very strict and very motivated and very consistent with these habits that I try to add to my life because I had a really strong motivational factor, like a low testosterone. It sucked. It was tough. It was tough in my relationships. It was tough just to get through an average day because my body hurt so much. I basically turned into an old man at 25. So I tried diet-wise. I've tried most diets, like and in researching all the different diets that are out there, the one thing that they all have in common is that you should eat more whole foods and get rid of processed foods. So no matter what people are eating, that is basically, in my opinion, the golden rule. That's the main thing that people need to focus on is get the processed junk out of your diet and just eat whole foods, foods that are in the perimeter of your grocery store, foods that grow from the ground or from something that eats what grows from the ground, and just like just real plain food. And that's where basically everybody needs to start. And that's basically the foundation of any healthy diet. And I think any sort of health guru, no matter what type of fad diet that they promote, would agree with that rule. So
Yeah.
that's where we need to start. But then for me, when I first got sick, that's when the vegan movement was in its heyday. And when you do any sort of research on there about health, that's all that I was able to find back then. And I'm open-minded to a fault. So I gave it a try, despite the fact that I produce dairy products for a living. And so I tried eating whole foods, vegan diet, and I didn't just dabble in it. Like I did it right by all definitions of people that are educating people to eat this way. It's like I had lots of beans. I really focused on proteins and healthy fats from plant sources, lots of beans, lots of seeds and nuts and avocados. And I also really focused on some of the more energy dense, more like caloric sources of whole food, lots of potatoes and And despite that, as time went on, I started getting more and more food sensitivity. Started off with me being sensitive to dairy and then and eggs. And then over time, I got more and more, like I started reacting to sulfites, I started reacting to gluten, and the list kept growing, like certain scents, even like certain smells, would cause a reaction. And I was like, something must be wrong, because I've been very strict and very eating this ideal diet by these standards, by the that is basically proposed by the whole plant food community. And I feel like my body is just getting more and more sensitive, is getting more and more irritated, and my digestion is getting worse and worse. So that's when I started adding in different amount, like started adding more and more whole forms of animal products. And one of the things that was great is I was able to start consuming dairy again, because I was eating raw dairy. Raw dairy is very easy to digest, very digestible. And I was reacting to the lactose and to the proteins in milk. And neither of those things were an issue when I consume raw dairy. So it's a less processed form. So it's like it's and then also just more of our, like, we start eating a lot of our grass-fed beef and a lot of our pastured turkeys and eating more and more meat consumption. And I basically slowly improved or slowly increased how much meat and animal products I consumed. And I basically by necessity, because one of the things I struggled to digest was fatty foods. So I couldn't eat a whole lot of meat at one point because it was too fatty, and that would upset my stomach as well. So I slowly increased my meat consumption. So I've basically tried, from a whole food perspective, all the different possibilities of the amounts of whole plant foods and whole animal foods. And I even went to the like recently tried the whole extreme where it's just nothing but meat. Tried that as well. But for me personally, I struggle to eat enough when I eat nothing but meat. I find I'm able to eat more when I have a more varied diet, especially fruit. But basically now I feel really, really good when I eat not just whole foods, but whole foods that are really digestible and all the nutrients are bioavailable. So it's just, yeah, it's a lot easier on my digestion, and I feel a lot better. I'm never bloated anymore, and I'm very consistent in every way, shape, or form. And that's how I personally feel best. But like, I strongly believe that as far as how much plant foods or how much animal foods people should eat, it really, I think there is some individual variation there. I'm not comfortable saying that everybody should eat the same things. We're all different. So as I think it's pretty safe to say we should eat whole foods. But then beyond that, you should try for yourself and be very wary to not become dogmatic in your beliefs. Because the trick is, like, if you eat whole foods, you will feel better. But you don't know. And then because you feel better, you can say, this is the best way to eat, and I'll eat this way for the rest of my life. But you don't know, potentially you could feel even better. And because you're being dogmatic and religious in your dietary choices, you're shutting yourself off from the possibility of feeling even better. So I would encourage people to not be dogmatic about their nutrition and just give it a try. See how you feel. Your body will speak to you as far as your energy levels and the way you're digesting foods and like your amount of vitality. And personally, I'm very interested in longevity. And to feel young, that's what vitality really is. Like, when you have lots of strength and energy, that's basically what youth feels like. So if you're able to feel youthful today, it's as you age, it'll slowly decrease from there. So I think it's a very powerful indication of this is a good diet that'll help with vitality and longevity if you have a higher ceiling to start off with. So the way you feel today is a good indication, and that's what I think people should base their diet off of. And it could vary depending on where you live, and as far as and also like what your heritage is. There's certain people that digest different foods differently. There's lots of factors in there, but yeah, if you try it out and you're not dogmatic, you'll be able to find out for yourself.
I think it's pretty amazing. And one of the things I think is really amazing is that you mentioned that through your diet, you were able to get your hormones level balanced. And there's so many people out there that resort to hormone therapy or they resort to over-the-counter products. And your whole body is run by hormones. So when your hormones are out of whack, it changes the whole composition of your body, the way you feel, the way you act, everything gets affected. And it's I think it's really important that you explain to the listeners how you actually changed your hormone levels and you got them more balanced, because that's something that many people, I mean many people in the United States, Canada, worldwide struggle with. And to hear you talk about your diet and how it affected your hormone balance would be great, because I think it really, that's something that so many people have tried so many different things, and there's so many products out there that promise so many different things. But how did you go about it naturally?
Yeah, and to be fair, it wasn't only diet that I changed. Like I said, I stacked all sorts of healthy habits, but diet was definitely a massive mover for me. And I noticed after the fact, not necessarily during, but like I noticed that when I was eating 100% whole plant foods, that I had insatiable cravings for dark chocolate. And I would eat 95% dark chocolate because I was trying to eat all whole foods. And I found that I could eat a massive meal and I could be completely full and stuffed, but my body, I still crave chocolate. And if I stayed in the house for too long and didn't head out to the barn and started work, like I would just keep eating this chocolate. It was never safe. And I realized after the fact that chocolate is one of maybe two plant sources of saturated fat. And it got me thinking because now when I'm eating, now that I eat a significant amount of animal whole foods, I don't have cravings. Chocolate could be sitting in the cupboard and I never touch it. I don't want it. I don't miss it. It's just it's the cravings aren't there. And it's amazing because I feel like my body is finally like at the point where like I'm getting everything that my body wants and needs because I don't have these cravings.
Right.
But yeah, so like saturated, I feel that the reason my body was craving saturated fat is that fat is not just energy. It's a building block as well as energy.
Yeah.
Like your body needs saturated fats and cholesterols and needs these healthy fats to create hormones. So like testosterone in my case, but any hormone really is usually started from cholesterol and your body builds those hormones from there. And then also like saturated fat, you need a lot of those fats for your cell walls for every cell in your body, the sorry, not the cell wall, but cell membrane. Every
Yes.
cell in your body has a cell membrane that's mostly fats, and like and every organelle within that cell is made with fats.
Right.
So it's important that you don't just consider it energy like carbohydrates. Like you can live without carbohydrates because there's no required nutrients. There's no building blocks that are required within the carbohydrates macronutrient. Whereas like that's not the case for fats. Like there are fats that are required, like your DHA. That, but there's also this fat is just a building block in general. So it's more than just energy. It's like similar to protein where you need it to build up your body and for
Right.
your body to work well. But yeah, so that was one of the keys for me is like yeah, get rid of the junk, get rid of the inflammatory foods that I was reacting to that causing all that stress and inflammation in my body so that my body could relax, but also give it the proper building blocks. And
Right.
like the whole foods are great for that in general, because you don't just hit your macronutrients. Whole foods are also great sources of your micronutrients. So
Right.
like that's also very important. But then yeah, for me, the including more animal foods was an important part of it because it calmed down my digestion because they were so digestible. But yeah, it was also just a more bioavailable, more digestible form of those same nutrients, of those micronutrients. So like that was a key part for me. But then it wasn't just the diet that I was changing over time. I was also introducing things like fasting and cold exposure and exercising and focusing on my sleep and just my overall stress levels. I've tried meditation for a little while too, but that didn't really make such an impact on me personally because I find if you look at what people say you should do to meditate, I basically do that to fall asleep every night. So I almost out of habit meditated every night ever since I was a little kid. So that was for me. But like the cold exposure, for example, did have a really big impact, because like one of the things that you do is when you're exposed to cold is you're trying to calm your breathing and cause your tr and calm your stress response and relax under this exposure, under this extreme stress. And becoming that allow me to become more aware of what stress feels like and what calm feels like. And with that knowledge, with that self-awareness, I was able to notice that throughout the day, just working, I'd be breathing in a way that's basically high stress breathing, really high up in my chest all the time. And then I also became more aware of my diaphragm, what my diaphragm is doing, which I didn't really have any awareness of that before cold exposure. But yeah, my diaphragm was always sucked up, and like, and I was breathing up in my chest. Whereas like relaxed breathing is you got to deep breathe deeper into your belly, and your diaphragm drops way down. And then I started adding like just general physiological stress, trying to just like manage that throughout the day. And then like it literally took 60, like I don't want to make it sound too simple now that I'm summarizing my journey, but it took 6 years of trying and researching and doing different habits and exercising. Like I was exercising in a way that try to improve my ability to move. I really wanted to move freely without pain. So like surprisingly, we don't naturally move in a way that's ideal. We move in a way that uses the least amount of energy possible. So we disproportionately load our joints and not our muscles when we just move without thinking. So I had to become more intentional with the way even just walking, I had to become more intentional how I walk so that I load my muscles instead of my joints and decrease the pain in my body. But what, like ultimately, after this long period of trying different things and being very committed to all these habits, it was ultimately a fast that gave my body that reset to. Then from that point on, that's when I started producing my own hormones. I felt different once I broke that fast, and I felt strong and healthy. And it was like, so then when I had my hormones retested, I didn't continue with the hormones because I felt good, I felt strong. And then sure enough, my hormones were in a normal range despite no longer taking my hormone therapy. So it was a long, many years of being consistent to these healthy habits, but I just need some sort of a reset for my body just to be able to be okay again with basically producing my own hormones. So that's what that fast seemed to have done for me. It was a biological reset.
That's amazing. That's amazing because a lot of people don't realize that you could do it naturally by changing your lifestyle, by changing the way you eat, by changing your sleeping habits, by a whole cocktail of different ways of living. And just by changing all those things, that you could actually reset the way your hormones are, and that actually opens up the doors because when you have low testosterone, you're very fatigued. You're very sluggish. Some people don't even have enough of strength to get out of bed. That's how weak it makes you. And, it can really damper your whole entire life. When your hormones aren't balanced, it just throws everything off. And, that's amazing that you were able to actually balance them. It shows how powerful the holistic living is,
The one quote that I really hung on to in that 6 year period was that the best health secret in medicine is that under the right conditions, your body can heal itself.
Yes. And that's so very true. That is very true. They said, a lot of people believe food for medicine because it was, there's so many nutrients in so many, healthy foods that if you consistently put good food in your body, a lot of the nutrients can help heal the body also.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what Hippocrates said back in 400 BC, is that the let food be thy medicine. And I feel like we've lost sight of that in recent years. And that's why now all the leading causes of death are either partially or completely preventable through lifestyle. And people don't realize how much impact and how much control they really have or can have over their health if they listen to Hippocrates. And let food be medicine.
Yeah, there are so many people that they just go to the doctor gives them a pill, they take the medication, they start getting side effects. So they go back to the doctor, and the doctor gives them another medication to override the side effect that they're getting from the first medication. And then they're starting to feel better, but new side effects are occurring. Then they go back to the doctor, and the doctor gives them another prescription. Before you know it, they have a pharmacy in their bathroom, and they're not, you know, and some of those medications can interact with each other, and it can slow down people, give them joint pain. There's lots of things that could happen, and people don't feel their best. And by trying to do things more naturally, you know, sometimes you do need medication, but in other instances, there are a lot of things that can be done naturally to avoid taking all those medications that have harsh side effects.
That's right, yeah. And I like you speak of like naturally healing, and then one of the things that put my mind to ease in increasing the amount of animal foods in my diet is I started thinking about what is our natural diet, what do we naturally eat as Homo sapiens,
Yes.
and so that's one of the things that put my mind at ease. I personally have always been a fan of human evolution, and there's a lot of lessons to learn in human evolution, and even if you don't believe in evolution as a whole, the lessons are still there, because there are these hominids that are in the fossil records are still the most similar to humans
Yes.
out of all the hominids. So like it's there's still valuable lessons in the fossil records if you don't
Yes.
believe in evolution. So when I looked at the research that's there based off of like where humans came from, I started realizing how big a role animal foods really played in making humans humans.
Right.
So there is like the Homo habilis is one of the fir it's like the first group of hominins with the name Homo, and basically they're famous for being the first group with that had evidence of making tools. So they would use the tools for doing things that help with scavenging, that help them break the bones open, eat the bone marrow, eat the brains, or that other animals wouldn't be able to get at. So that's really a point in our in the fossil records where the consumption of meat really started to increase.
Yeah.
And with every step where we saw evidence of increased meat consumption, there was a coinciding increase in the size of their brains.
Oh, really?
So the Homo habilis had a much larger brain than earlier hominins or earlier apes or something like that were in the fossil records. And that's along with the evidence of them using tools to eat bone marrow. And then, yeah, the transitions are kind of gray of like when Homo habilis turned into Homo erectus, but they start seeing more signs of them also using these tools, maybe potentially for hunting.
Wow.
But Homo erectus was unique in that that's when they started seeing clear evidence of them hunting in groups. And that's like a more recent in the fossil records, is like that you really start seeing true evidence of them using tools and hunting in groups. So like because they're actively not just scavenging, but going out and actually
Yeah.
killing and hunting, the meat consumption increased dramatically. And once again, along with that, so did the size of their brains.
Right.
And that similar trend continued through the Homo Neanderthals, which are very similar to us, just maybe a little more adapted to the cold, and then Homo sapiens, with more and more meat consumption and larger brains. And that trend continued up until 10,000 years ago, when all of a sudden there's a massive drop off in the size of our brains,
Yeah.
and our overall stature dropped off dramatically. The health of our teeth, and they can see just like on injuries and stuff on the bones and stuff that we weren't healing properly. Like all of a sudden, around 10,000 years ago, there's a massive. If you look over this, the if you look at in a graph, there's a constant increase with brain size and meat consumption, and all of a sudden there's a massive drop off in brain size 10,000 years ago.
Wow.
And that was when the agricultural revolution began. And all of a sudden, we moved away from hunting and we moved towards growing our wheat and developing more crops. And basically, we massively increased the amount of plant foods in our diet and massively decreased the amount of meat in our diet. So we were able to get lots of calories doing this way, and there would be reliable calories, and we wouldn't have to travel as far. But as a consequence, we became deficient in lots of nutrients because they're just not as bioavailable. We moved away from what we were eating for 2.5 million, 3 million years, and moved towards eating far more plants. And over time, like to more recent days, our stature and our health has improved because we found ways of processing these foods that we were able to basically digest them better. They'd be more available through cooking and through fermenting. Like if you have your, instead of just eating and smashing up your wheat, if you ferment your wheat and you break it down to a powder, and then you cook it, and like all those steps improve the digestibility and of that food. So over time, we've regained a lot of our stature and a lot of our height and a lot of our health through processing these plant foods. And like if you look like at the tallest populations though in modern times, most of those have significant amounts of animal products in their diet. Like if you the tribes like the Maasai in Africa, like they're eating lots of meat, blood and dairy, and that's the majority of their diet, and they're some of the tallest people. If you look at like the Northern Europe, like the Scandinavian countries, a lot of huge Viking type people there that they consume a lot of meat and dairy because like you're way up north and there's not as many plant foods available seasonally. So those are some really big people. But then also like where I come from, I was born in Holland, and considered the tallest country in the world. But there was actually a time in Europe where the Dutch were actually the shortest people in Europe. Like the mid 19th century, where all of a sudden our average height increased by 20 centimeters. We all of a sudden jumped in height and became the tallest country in the world. And that through basically, like if you look at what we eat, like what I grew up eating and what is typically eaten, it's a lot of dairy, a lot of cheese, and a lot of milk. So like that's really helped that those animal foods that are highly digestible nutrients, especially when you're young, really help you grow to your genetic potential. And there's more evidence of that. Like before colonization in North America, the Plains Indians were amongst the tallest people in the world. And what were they eating? They were basically eating mostly buffalo. That's their preferred food source of these Plains Indians. But now they're no longer amongst the tallest people because they've basically moved to a more Western style diet. And if you, and it's a trend like of in like the plant-based community, in the vegan diet, unfortunately, there's not too many people that did it the way I try to do, where like I eat nothing but whole foods. Typically, it coincides. People that eat a vegan diet also eat a highly processed diet. They eat more processed foods on average than people that also consume meat. And I feel like a part of that is just like your body wants those more digestible nutrients. It's craving like that. Something a little more nutrient or calorie dense, not necessarily nutrient dense. But yeah, so like all those cravings are improved when you look at like just eating enough animal products as well, and then figuring out where the ideal spot is for you, for as far as consuming that. But then, yeah, and if you look at more evidence in the fossil records, there's something called nitrogen isotope, and there's different types of nitrogen that are heavier than others, but and over time they break down. And they break down in a predictable way. But you can look at like there's a natural amount of this heavier type of nitrogen in the environment. So when you have animals that eat plants, they eat a certain amount of this heavier nitrogen, this nitrogen isotope, and a certain amount of that concentration is in their bones. they eat it from the plants, this type of nitrogen, and then it gets concentrated in their bones. And you can find the amount of nitrogen isotopes in their bones today. So
Wow.
you can look at nitrogen isotopes, and then carnivores, or the animals that eat those plant animals, they have more of this nitrogen isotopes in their bones because they're not just eating the plants, they're eating the plant eaters that ate the plants. So is that nitrogen isotopes, it bioaccumulates, and they're eating far more of this nitrogen isotopes than the plant eater ate. So the carnivores, in that period, they would have far more of this nitrogen isotope in their bones. So you can look and see approximately in comparison to the other animals, how much animal product, how much meat did different species eat. So if you look at like the wild horse, they had a relatively lower level of this nitrogen isotope. But if you look at the Arctic fox,
Right.
was up north, and it's basically eating nothing but meat. It's a carnivore, so it had a much higher level of this stable nitrogen isotope in their bones. If you look at they like this study, they looked at four different groups of Homo sapiens before agriculture, before the agriculture revolution, so more than 10,000 years ago. If they look at the populations of humans and they looked at their bones, their nitrogen isotope levels were even higher than the fox. So based off of those results, that would classify pre-agriculture humans as hyper carnivores because they didn't just eat the plant eaters, they ate the carnivores. So they were concentrating all of those nitrogen isotopes into their bones. So it's clear based off the nitrogen isotope data as well that humans ate a significant amount of animal products, a significant amount of meat. And if you really think, like a lot of the fruits and vegetables that we eat today, most of them didn't exist a few thousand years ago. We create a majority of them there, and then even so, like the ones that were available back then, before we bred them to be basically more calorically dense or more or bigger or more beautiful or whatever, we selected them for what traits that we wanted. A lot of those foods, they won't be as tasty. There won't be as many calories in there. There would be way more anti-nutrients in there as well. And we just over thousands and thousands of years, we bred that to have be more digestible, less anti-nutrients, more calories, and then basically completely unrecognizable of where a lot of these foods originally came from, like corn, the grass, like the grains are huge now, but they wouldn't have that back before agriculture. So if you really think, what would our ancestors have eaten preferentially in their environment when they're hunting and gathering? They'll have some fruit maybe, but the calories in fruit even back then was much, much lower, like basically crab apples and some berries. And really the most caloric dense food that they had available to them was meat. So that's what they obviously preferentially ate back then. But then still, despite the fact they still had a lot of fiber in their diet, like you can look at fossilized poop from humans, and they still had lots of fiber in their diet. So like I don't think it's necessarily arguable that we were omnivorous to some degree, but like we definitely preferred eating those animal products. So like we definitely and then and that we've been preferring those foods for up to 3 million years. So like that is the foundation of our evolution, of our or the foundation of our body is eating animal-based foods. So that really put my mind at ease as far as like consuming a significant amount of animal products. And beyond that, one of the main concerns that people will have when they're eating these more animal products is, especially if you eat a significant amount like I do, you'll notice that typically your cholesterol levels will increase. And cholesterol has been demonized for a long time as being one of the causes of heart disease, and heart disease is a leading cause of death. So there's been a real push historically to lower cholesterol levels in an attempt to lower our heart disease risk. Fortunately, despite us lowering our animal fat consumption and trying to lower cholesterol and having low cholesterol lowering drugs, our heart disease risk is doing nothing but increase.
Yes.
Like, we're better at treating heart disease and intervening and keeping people alive, but if you actually look at how many people are getting heart disease, it's constantly increasing.
Yes.
So obviously it's not working.
Right.
Humanizing cholesterol is not working. And the reason is cholesterol is involved in the formation of plaques in our body, and that, and then the release of those plaques can lead to heart disease or stroke. The cholesterol is not necessarily the root cause of plaque formation. So your cholesterol is what your body uses to try to patch up all sorts of damage or irritation in your blood vessels and your
Right.
blood. So just because it's basically, I like to compare cholesterol to a police officer at a crime scene. So just because there's always a police officer at a crime scene does not mean that it's the police officer that caused the crime.
Right.
So the cholesterol is always present in the formation of plaques and atherosclerosis, but it's not, the cholesterol is what your body's trying to do to heal the damage. The actual root cause of atherosclerosis is the damage and the irritation. So that's what you need to try to prevent. And so, like, you might think, okay, so cholesterol is not an issue. I can just ignore cholesterol. Well, no, you shouldn't ignore cholesterol, because cholesterol is only not an issue if you don't have that damage and irritation in your blood vessels.
Right.
That's when cholesterol is no longer an issue. And you can predict whether you have that by whether or not you're metabolically healthy. And then you can, like, you, people define metabolic health by basically, like, your weight, your height to waist ratio, your overall weight, and
Yeah.
also, like, your blood glucose levels, your fasting blood glucose, and your blood pressure, and your, like, hemoglobin A1C, the amount of what is that, the glycation of your hemoglobin, the sugar balance. Hemoglobin. If you measure those things, you can predict whether or not you're metabolically healthy. And unfortunately, only 12% of the population can be considered metabolically healthy.
Yeah.
And so only those 12% really don't need to worry about cholesterol, because, like, if you, even though cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease, if you have a damaged arteries, the cholesterol, if you get rid of that cholesterol, it still won't cause, it'll still improve your atherosclerosis. It'll still prevent the development of plaques.
Right.
Like, people who have damage, it is still beneficial to lower their cholesterol if they have that damage and irritation.
Right.
But you're much better off just be healthy. Don't have
Yeah.
that damage, don't have that irritation. And then you can use the, then you don't need to worry about your cholesterol levels. And then you can really just, like, just eat what your body craves and desires.
Yes.
And yeah, so, like, so that there's actually a research study that came out very recently, by Dave Feldman, and he looked at people with incredibly high cholesterol levels, but they refuse to take statins and refuse to take the drugs to lower those cholesterol levels. And
Yes.
these people were eating a very high fat diet, a lot of animal products, but they refused to take these drugs. So they were the perfect candidates to research. And these people were matched with other people who have normal cholesterol levels. They were matched for things like smoking and for weight and stuff like that. And once they did that, they realized that the people that were metabolically healthy, there was absolutely no correlation between cholesterol and heart disease. They were
All right.
measuring not just the hard plaque in your blood vessels, but also the soft plaque. Like, the hard plaque is not as dangerous, it's fairly stable, but the soft is what poses a risk of breaking loose and then
Right.
causing it further on down the line. So it's, but they, and most people, or most tests, only measure your hard plaque, your calcified plaque,
Yes.
whereas in this study they were looking at both, and no increased development of atherosclerosis or plaque formation with these people with crazy high cholesterol levels.
Yeah.
And that's very recent, and it's still an ongoing study. They're going to follow these people over time and continue doing these scans and looking for any progression. But yeah, I think that's proof of like that cholesterol is more nuanced than people seem to describe on the internet. Cholesterol in and of itself is not bad. It's only bad if you have that damage and irritation in your blood vessels.
Right.
So like the next logical question is, well, how do you prevent the damage and irritation? And that's through things like you want to avoid those highly that highly processed junk. You want
Yes.
any preservatives and stuff like that. That'll all cause stress and irritation, inflammation in your body. You want to avoid foods like me. I had to avoid pasteurized dairy because it was causing inflammation. I was reacting to it. That's all that immune response. That's all inflammation and irritation.
Yes.
And also like the huge waves and different differentiations in our blood glucose levels. Like your body really wants a stable blood glucose levels. Any sort of variation like is very toxic to your body. That's why diabetes is so damaging, because your body is no longer able to manage the your blood glucose levels. So it gets
Right.
too high. It's very damaging for your body. It binds to all sorts of different things in your body and decreases your ability for your body to work. That's the glycation. It's sugar binding to like
Yeah.
your hemoglobin, into enzymes and cells and everything. You want to avoid that glycation.
Right.
Oh, but so when you actually look at like what that huge increase, if you have like a highly processed carbohydrate, like you're eating your white bread and your white rice and whatever else, or you're then you have a huge spike in sugars, and then you have a huge spike in insulin, and then you crash because your insulin is so high, you crash, and then you have a really low blood glucose levels, too low, and then your body craves more sugars. Then you have the
Right.
next piece of highly processed carbohydrate, and you just keep going on this wacky cycle, and that's damaging your arteries as well. That's a lot of irritation as well.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. You made such great points, very good points. I think a lot of people aren't, don't realize a lot of those things. You just read a lot of articles on the internet and they don't hear about the soft plaque versus the hard plaque, and they don't realize, that the hard plaque isn't the bad one, and a lot of the studies that are done. Because when you go onto the internet, every article is written by someone who is biased in a certain way, and so you have a lot of cross information, and it can get very confusing. So you made very, very good points. Very good points. Now, if you had to take all the information that we went over today and you had to summarize it, what type of things would you like to emphasize to people?
Eat whole foods and eat a natural diet. And
Yeah.
then the last one would be like, don't be dogmatic about your diet. It's not a religion. It's fuel for your body.
Yeah.
So just don't be afraid to try within the rule of eating whole foods. Just try for yourself. What kind of diet makes your body feel best?
Right. That's a very good point. You have to really go at what makes your body feel best. Everybody is different. Now, if people want to find more information about you, where can they go?
Yeah, if you visit our website, that's a lot of information is there from about our farm and what we're doing on our farm to try to improve animal welfare and further regenerative agriculture. But also, there's a lot of resources there for finding out more information. Like there's links to podcasts, like this one will be on our on their website, and then there's also links to our social media. And also there's like an email info at More Elites there that you can email if you have any questions, and I read those emails directly. And also like there's a chance that you can sign up to our email list, and if you do and you live in Ontario, you sign up to that email list, you're automatically entered to win a sample box where you can try all of our products. So that's our website is where you can find all that information, and that's basically the best way.
It's
So they're
amazing.
more.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful, Sander. I love having you on the show. You always have such great information to provide. And I love the topics that you talk about. You talk about a lot of different types of health issues and products and ideas, and you do a great job really getting the message across to people and making people see things from a wider point of view, kind of out of the box, so to speak. So thank you so much. I appreciate today and having you come on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a great day.
You too.